This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 4th of October, 2024. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Now, may I introduce our readers for this week. Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Dunlan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. And so we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording that you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. This number can be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And remember, as you listen to the recordings, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from one item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access our weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. Recordings are in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Excuse me. You can also hear the Winchester Talking Newspaper on Hours Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. So, on with our usual headline stories. And the first is from Deborah, please. Warning over released inmates with no home.
A prison watchdog has warned that too many Winchester inmates are being released homeless. The Independent Monitoring Board, or IBM, released its annual report on Winchester Prison, located in Romsey Road, on Thursday, September the 26th. The watchdog has expressed concern over the effects of early release of prisoners without adequate preparation and persistent overcrowding in the prison. Key findings from the 2023-4 annual report note that additional support is needed for rehabilitation and resettlement services, as they are put under pressure from early release schemes to aid prison capacity, and that many men are being released without adequate preparation. Data shows that between January to May 2024, 124 men have been released under the End of Custody Supervised License Scheme, ECSL. Of those, 38% were released as homeless because no accommodation could be arranged, and 21% breached their licence and were recalled. The report also notes a rise in the level of prison violence, with assaults on staff increasing by 85%, with 232 incidents in the past year. Meanwhile, prisoner-on-prisoner assaults also increased by 35%, and there was an increase of 43% of instances when force was used to restrain or control prisoners. Incidents of self-harm have also increased by 47% in the past year, with the report saying that there was a rise in both the number of individuals self-harming and the severity of incidents recorded. The IBM, that's the prison board, has also raised concerns about the condition of the prison, noting that it has leaking roofs and ceilings, inconsistent heating and water systems, and damaged brickwork. Some workshops and cells have been non-functional for months as a result of this. However, the board has also noted that the number of complaints by prisoners about lost property has fallen, and that charitable organisations such as Barefaced Theatre, Saints Foundation and the Samaritans, as well as the chaplaincy, are continuing to deliver work to improve the outcome for prisoners. The chair of the Winchester Prison Board, Sherin Moss, said, "The senior leadership team at Winchester Prison deserves praise and recognition for its drive towards continuous improvement in the face of an increasingly challenging set of circumstances. While levels of violence are of real concern for the board, we note a recent reduction in figures and trust this trend can continue. The Ministry of Justice has been contacted for comment.
Thank you, Deborah. Rich has got something about cutting lollipop ladies, which sounds a bit vicious.
Well, it clearly is, because it's described as an axe, a cut too far.
Oh, my goodness.
The plan to stop funding school crossing patrols across Hampshire has been slammed, with parents, children and councillors saying it's an immoral and illogical cut that goes too far. Children from St Mark's Primary School in Basingstoke were among the people to voice their concerns about Hampshire County Council's plan to withdraw funding for school crossing patrols due to the deficit gap of £175 million it expects from 2025-26. Jackson, 11, Sophia, 10 and Harry, 8, told county councillors that the decision could lead one of them or their friends become one of the 4,577 pedestrians aged 15 and under who were hurt, killed or left with serious life-changing injuries on UK roads last year. They said, "We don't want one of us or our friends to become one of those numbers." David Payne, a father of three children at the school and chair of the School Parent Teacher Association, said the lollipop person is invaluable for the community that is disheartened and angry about the measure. Mr. Payne said, "These patrols are invaluable. These crossing patrol officers not only ensure that it's safe to cross for the children and their parents, but also highlight to drivers to slow down and show the children how to cross safely. I am incredibly disheartened and quite frankly angry to hear the council is considering cutting this vital service to our community." Councillor Malcolm Wade emphasised that the savings the measure would generate are a tiny amount compared to the safety of the children. Councillor Wade said, "We're doing it because we have a financial black hole, but £1.1 million is a tiny amount of that black hole. The impact on the safety of children is a big issue. We're in such a financial hole where we endeavour to throw the baby out with the bathwater." He added that the plan is a cut too far, since a child's life is not worth £1.1 million, and that the council shouldn't put Hampshire children in a life-threatening situation. Councillor Wade said, "We really should not be looking at this. What is the price of a child's life? Not £1.1 million. We'll never get that child back. If we do this, there will be accidents where there were previous crossing patrols. Don't hide yourself, because they won't, because there will, statistically, it will happen. We should not put the children of Hampshire in this situation. We as a council shouldn't be doing this. This is a cut too far. I would say we shouldn't do it at all. I can never support this. It's immoral, illogical, and not right for the safety of Hampshire children." Despite the Universal Services Select Committee not supporting officers' recommendation to withdraw £114,000 to allow the service of 17 school crossing patrols across Hampshire, the recommendation will be sent to the Cabinet for a final decision on October the 14th.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, your story, please.
Yeah, I have Mum of Two Goes to Battle with Big Tech. A mother has launched a campaign to ban smartphones in schools for children up to the end of year 9, or 14 years. Claire Ferneyhough, a mum of two from the Winchester area, says the use of phones for children is harming their development and mental health. She is also concerned for parents who are caught between giving the phones to children when they are too young and seeing them bullied by classmates for not having them. Claire got together with her friend and fellow mum, Daisy Greenwell, in February to launch a campaign called Smartphone Free Childhood. Both have been withholding smartphones from their children until they are 15. It is getting nationwide support, and a Parents Pact petition has been signed by nearly 48,000 people, including more than 2,400 in Hampshire from 296 schools. In the Winchester area, as of yesterday, most support has come from Prince's Mead Kingsworthy with 130 names, followed by St Bede Primary with 100, Westgate Secondary 86, Western Primary with 79, and Week Primary with 73. They both agreed that they weren't going to give their children phones when they started school, but they recognised the difficult dilemma they now faced. Claire said, "We either give our children access to an adult product that opens the door to harmful content, addictive algorithms, and the anxiety machine that is social media, or we risk alienating them from their peers at a crucial stage of their development." They set up a WhatsApp group to support each other in the decision to hold off on buying smartphones, and within 24 hours, thousands of other parents had joined the group after an Instagram post by Daisy went viral. The original group quickly maxed out 1,000 members, so they encouraged people to set up local groups to build the conversation in their areas. Within hours, more than 60 smartphone-free childhood WhatsApp groups had launched the length and breadth of Britain, each with up to 200 members, kicking off a national conversation about the harms of smartphones for children. Now, the smartphone-free childhood movement has over 150,000 parents signed up, with Hampshire being the biggest community outside London. Claire, who trained as a psychologist, advised that these problems consist of viewing harmful content, loneliness, increasing anxiety to cyberbullying. The Parents Pact was launched this week, where parents will agree to delay giving their children smartphones until the end of year 9. This pact saw 20,000 signatures on the first day and is currently at 47,500. Claire said, "The positive response has been overwhelming. I have been contacted by parents in floods of tears who are so grateful to have found a community that shares their concerns." The next steps of the initiative is to establish the smartphone-free schools movement that will aim to encourage schools to make a pledge to not allow smartphones. And after that, Claire says, "We will keep pushing until we get real change. Childhood is too short to be spent on a smartphone. We are fighting back against big tech."
Thank you, Jackie. My headline piece is Work to Start on Motorway Junction. Work is due to start soon on a £200 million project to transform a major Hampshire motorway junction and improve journey times. National Highways says preparations will start on October the 11th for major works at Junction 9 of the M3 at Winnall. The scheme is expected to cut journey times, with the main bulk of the closures and work starting next year and lasting for 3 years. But over the coming weeks, vegetation management and compound construction work will take place to prepare the site. Services, foundations and parking for office and welfare facilities will also be installed at the site entrance, with improvements to safety at the A272 Spitfire link. Archaeological investigations will also take place from mid-October, with some stripping and replacing of the top layers of soil. All work will take place during the day and on weekends away from the road as part of the wider project that is expected to cost £190 million to £210 million. It comes ahead of work to change Junction 9 so that it is free-flowing between M3 and A34, widening the junction and building two new bridges, allowing the M3 to become four lanes wide. Currently, the junction is a major bottleneck, with queues during rush hour. Almost all traffic travelling north towards London on the Midlands from Southampton has to pass through Junction 9 and is a common route for freight heading to Southampton docks. A National Highway spokesperson said, "We'll also extend the southbound slip onto the M3 so that traffic has more time to join the motorway and improve the safety of the junction with upgraded signs and gantries." Walker, cyclist and horse riders will also benefit from our scheme, with non-motorised routes connecting Kingsworthy and Winnell and Long Walk and Eastern Lane. The work is expected to complete at some time between 2025 and 2030, although the level of disruption is unknown at this stage. Former MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford, Steve Bryan, has been a supporter of the scheme and welcomed the approval of the upgrades in May. He said, "For more than a decade, I have fought to secure this vital transformation at Junction 9 of M3 at Winnell. It is a national priority of major regional importance, with a big local win in terms of congestion through Winnell and, in particular, many other parts of Winchester and the villages." Right, well, we now go on to death notices, starting with Deborah, please.
Baker, Jennifer Baker, née Smith, formerly of Cheriton, on the 13th of September, aged 68.
Davidson, Rosemary Ann Davidson, formerly Dowman, peacefully, on the 14th of September.
Duncan, John Duncan, peacefully at home, 14th of September, aged 87.
Godber, Dr. Colin Godber, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 5th September, aged 84.
Gunner, Patricia Edith Gunner, née Leach, on the 19th of September, aged 91.
Isaac, Malcolm John Isaac, MBE, peacefully at home, on the 17th of September, aged 95.
Mayers, Maureen Mayers, peacefully at home, 21st of September, aged 97.
Mumford, David Kenneth Mumford, peacefully at Brookdale Care Home, the 17th of September, aged 89.
Newell, Valerie Sinclair Newell, peacefully on the 16th of September, aged 85.
Perry, John Frank George Perry, at home on the 3rd of September, aged 90.
Wigger, Martin Wigger, peacefully at home on the 9th of September, aged 64.
Thank you. Now we move on, please, to Christian Comment, read by Deborah.
And this week it's offered by the Reverend Philip Crinks, and he entitles it A Good Harvest. Earlier this month, I spent 2 weeks in northern India. I was visiting a programme which supports the livelihoods of rural communities in Uttar Pradesh. Like us, they're in the harvest season, about to harvest a rice crop. They will then plant cereal crops, which they will be harvesting in March. People in those communities live on £2 a day. Most have tiny land holdings on which they combine subsistence farming with small cash crops. They have limited access to irrigation and crop protection. For them, the failure of a harvest is a high risk, and if it occurs, it's a disaster. Of course, that's not the case for us in Hampshire. Most of us don't work in agriculture. If local production fails, we have access to food from elsewhere. Even our much-valued local farmers have happily been able to develop diversified and resilient forms of agriculture. Nonetheless, this Sunday, many churches will celebrate their harvest festival. Why is this? Are we just being nostalgic? Far from it. Spiritually, we share much with our brothers and sisters around the world and with previous generations. The central theme for reflection in Scripture is abundance. The Lord our God has brought us into a good land, a land of brooks, fountains and springs that flow through valleys and hills, a land of wheat, barley, vines, fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where we eat food without scarcity. So said the Deuteronomist in the 7th century BC. It could be written to here today. The question is how we respond. When we receive in abundance, we tend to congratulate ourselves on our cleverness. Certainly we're called to use our God-given talents to bring in harvests which we can all share. But we also need to know our place in the cosmos. When you eat and are satisfied, you are to bless the Lord for the good land that he has given you, says the Deuteronomist. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses in which to dwell, and when your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increase, then your heart will become proud. Increasingly, we see the physical and economic risks we're running by this kind of pride. If we cease to value and care for the created world, it will no longer bring forth this abundance. But the spiritual risks are even bigger. We may say in our hearts that the power and strength of our own hands have made this wealth. But human power has to be seen in relation to God's infinite power. We didn't create ourselves. We cannot sustain ourselves spiritually. We have not managed to redeem ourselves. Only an attitude of gratitude for the abundance we enjoy will give us the sense of who we really are, of the rights and responsibilities of our common humanity with people around the world, and of our relationship to that divine power which is so much greater than our own. Reverend Philip Kinks.
Thank you, Deborah. Now we now move on to letters to the editor, starting with Richard, please.
Mismanagement, says Mr. Barrett of Nicholson Place. Once again, the customer, we the public, are having to pay for the water company's mismanagement. All we've heard is how much profit they made, how much in bonuses being assigned by the high management, the cost of repairing the pipework. They don't tell us how much was paid to shareholders, who refused to help the companies out in these hard times. Then above all, how much of the profits went into the logistics to ensure all waste disposal pipelines were adequate to keep up with the extra development, and of course are now the weather due to climate change? The wastage system needs to be enlarged, not relined. But of course, there will be bureaucratic bulls
Come on, Richard.
I don't think I'm misready. I think I just don't understand it. There will be bureaucratic bull's excrement in return.
Oh, no.
Oh, I see.
Should I do it again? No, carry on.
Oh, dear. Yes, bullshit, quite. G.N. Barrett of Nicholson Place, Oldsford.
I don't think I'm going to recover. Jackie, how are you doing?
I'm sorry.
Okay, I have a letter entitled False Economy Over NHS Pay. With my own family very much affected, may I, through the columns of your newspaper, give support to the nurses' pay claim? We know that over the past 14 years, the pay of doctors working in our hospital wards alongside the nurses had been deliberately suppressed by the last government to force their pay levels down below where the impact of inflation they should be, sorry, below where with the impact of inflation they should be in 2024. The hidden agenda was to boost the profits of the private health companies who now own and run our NHS, for the shareholders to benefit, no doubt many of whom were residents in Parliament. The BMA has now negotiated with this new government a pay restoration package starting at 22% over 2 years. For the very same reason, the nurses working alongside the doctors were also subjected to the same tyrannical suppression of pay over the past 14 years. As a result, we have a brain drain of nurses and doctors said to be in the region of 50,000 a year who are leaving to work in other countries. It is a ludicrous and false economy for this to continue. The impact of this is leaving our hospital wards dangerously understaffed. I know because unable to cope with the pressure and low pay, two of my family are now nurses in Florida and driving new Tesla cars. Another will soon be following them. The practice used by the last government was to rob third world countries of low-paid professional doctors and nurses in order to maintain the hidden agenda. We must now grow our own professional workforce of doctors and nurses. To this end, nurses must receive the same pay restoration formula as the doctors. This is now being negotiated by the RCN, and we must support the nurses in their fight for restoration of their pay levels. And that's from Henry Harwood, Hackworth Gardens in Hedge End.
Thank you, Jackie. My letter is written by Mr. J.A. Maguire. It's headed City Memories. I am very happy that Simon of Badger Farm is displaying his knowledge of Winchester. Does he remember the fishing tackle shop in the square, as I seem to remember his being there in 1953? I still haven't had a reply on who the hammer and sickle was almost totally carved into the side of St. Catherine's Hill. Yours, as always, a Wintonian, born in the Brooks in 1941. This is written by Mr. J.A. Maguire of Waverway, Stanmore, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Christopher Rice, Army Barracks. I write in support of Councillor David Towser's letter in the Chronicle on September the 19th in respect of the proposed development of the Sir John Moore Barracks site, in which he sets out very clearly why the northern part of this site should be protected from development. Having been owned by the MOD for many years, restricted access to the northern field has resulted in the fields becoming a richly diverse area, and as such, they have been categorised as a candidate site of importance for nature conservation, or SINC. Winchester's local plan policy, NE5, states inter alia that the local planning authority will protect sites of international and national importance and local nature conservation sites and SINCs from inappropriate development, in which case there appears to be good reason why the local LPA should refuse permission for this development as it stands. The same policy notes that the Environment Act of 2021 requires development proposals to secure a minimum 10% measurable biodiversity net gain over the pre-development biodiversity unit score. I fail to see how this can possibly be achieved under the current proposals, which include three significant areas of housing and associated access roads, plus a park and ride car park within the northern area of the site. As Councillor Towser pointed out, the United Kingdom has become one of the most nature-depleted countries in the world, and it is surely now time to call a halt to such damaging proposals. I, for one, want to be able to look my grandchildren in the eye and tell them I did all I could to protect the world they will inherit, which could become a barren wasteland if we don't start to take action now. I hope others might feel the same and will make their views known to Winchester City Council and our local MP. And that's from Christopher Rice, Main Road, Littleton.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
David Gosney wants to talk about the fuel payment. The uproar about the winter fuel payment exposes that Starmer and Reeves are so far removed from ordinary people's experience that they do not understand that many people living at or near break-even have to budget. Removing a sizeable amount of funds at short notice is going to have a very dramatic effect. It was widely reported in June that Octopus would repay the Treasury £3 billion in September, resulting from the bulb. If Starmer and Reeves had demonstrated the sense we hoped they would have used, some of this for... God, I'm in a bad morning, aren't I?
Yes.
That they would have used some of this for this year's winter fuel payment. The payment is a crude way of ensuring that the poorest pensioners receive help. But they could easily have said this year it will be taxed, mitigating the loss to taxpayers of funds paid to those that don't need it, and said that they will come forward with a more targeted scheme next year. For the two of them to demonstrate such a lack of understanding of economics, does not bode well for the future. David Gosney, Clayhill Close, Waltham Close. Waltham.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
I have a letter from John Airy in Kingsworthy, which has a slightly different take on the winter fuel allowance. I'm very much in agreement with one of your letter contributors, Chronicle Letters, September 26. I am also appalled at the removal of the winter fuel allowance. I have a friend in Chilbolton Avenue who doesn't now know how he will afford to charge up his electric car. Another in Sleepers Hill, having sleepless nights worrying about heating his indoor pool. And another whose address I can't disclose, who is at his wit's end as to how he's going to pay for his hydroponics this winter and is worried sick that he'll miss this Christmas's crop. It's appalling. And that's from John Airy, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
Oh, my goodness me. What a lovely letter. Right, the next letter is from Karen McCleary, and it's headed... it's about the army barracks again, yes. Could I wholeheartedly agree with the sentiments expressed by Peter Lamb, Chronicle Letters, September 26th, re the use of St John Moore Barracks and all the wonderful facilities that it has, which should be utilised as much as possible in any redevelopment. I worked there for several years as a nursing sister for the MOD until 2021, and I know the site well. The buildings were put up in the 1960s, so are not very old and can easily be repurposed, as Peter Lamb suggests. We used to see several hundred recruits during the week in the medical centre for both medical and nursing care, as well as dental care. This could be converted into a civilian GP's surgery. The gym, the climbing wall and the swimming pool are fabulous facilities, and the living quarters, if refurbished and brought up to date, would provide good accommodation. There's no need to knock it all down and start again. Peter did not mention the barracks church. This gem is an oasis of peace and tranquility and could provide the centre of a vibrant new community. Let us hope the planners show common sense and make the best use of a pretty, well-designed facility. That is written by Karen McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy. Deborah, please.
And the next letter comes from Councillor Lulu Bowerman. Pothole progress. We know just how important roads, and specifically their condition, are to the people of Hampshire, and we're working hard to make them stronger, having invested extra funding so that we can make even more improvements to the 5,500 miles of roads that the County Council is responsible for. The additional £22,500 investment over 2 years, on top of the £89 million we typically spend annually to maintain the roads, has so far enabled extra crews, equipment and material to be brought in to repair even more road defects, like potholes, more quickly, as well as improve the surface quality of many more miles of road. Latest data shows that between April and June this year, we've made good progress, having improved the surface of 345,655 square metres of road and repaired 18,505 road defects. And with the autumn and winter weather in mind, 43,479 drains and gullies have also been cleared and cleaned, ready to cope with the heavy rainfall. We'll soon be starting our winter maintenance season from the 1st of October. And as with previous years, our highway crews will be ready day and night to spread salt on the main routes when freezing road surface temperatures are forecast, in order to keep Hampshire moving. We know that work to make improvements on the roads can sometimes be inconvenient to road users, so we appreciate people's patience as we keep up the momentum on this vital work. We also wish to thank everyone who has reported road defects to us, such as potholes and other issues affecting the condition of the county's roads. Please continue to do so, because when you report a road issue to us, it means we can act more quickly to fix the problem and make our roads stronger. You can do this via the Our Hants app, which can be downloaded from the Apple or Google Play Store, or online via the County Council's website. And that was from Councillor Lulu Bowman, Executive Member for Highways and Waste, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
This is from Phil Gagg about the bus station. I was interested to read about the bus station, Chronicle September 19. Big changes are afoot on buses, and readers may want to say in two important consultations. The consultation on the next local plan proposes moving the bus station to the railway station so there can be a local transport interchange there. Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis Transport and Planning Group believe this change will be good for public transport journeys between all parts of the district and all stations on the railway system, reducing the time taken changing between buses and trains. For this to work well, all bus services need to serve both the railway station and the centre of town, with changed timetables and bus routes. Buses from the east would run through the centre and terminate at the station, and buses from the north and west would call at the station and terminate in the centre. For example, this would let buses from Alton serve all parts of the centre and terminate at the station, connecting with trains to and from Southampton and Bournemouth. To give good connections, district buses would all arrive at roughly the same time to connect northbound and southbound trains. Then all routes would be timetabled to depart after the trains had left, taking passengers that have arrived off those trains. This will require plenty of space for the buses. There is a bit of a problem, though. The City Council is also consulting on the latest draft of the plan for the station area, but this has not allocated enough space for the bus station we would need. So, we encourage readers to respond to the local plan consultation by October the 13th and the station area draft plan by October the 27th, supporting this idea, asking them to specify that the master plan must include a transport interchange and to save enough space for this. Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Richard, Jackie, please.
I have a letter about parking charges from LF White. As I write this letter on the eve of another parking charge price rise, the residents of Q&R permit holders are still waiting for a response that was sent to their three local councillors, Martin Todd, Chris Westwood, Lucille Thompson and Kelsey Lerney, air quality guru, on July the 21st, 2024. The residents are being disrespected and disregarded over their concerns about parking problems in the affected streets. They had asked to be in attendance at a meeting that was to be held, but no one had the courtesy to reply to that request. And for the attention of Councillor Kelsey Lerney, the residents have never asked to park outside their houses, but to have concessionary parking be reinstated. The councillors, for some reason, are refusing to speak to them, which is quite baffling, as the concerns are genuine. All they want to know is they are going to help. Is are they going to help or not, as they can only change the policy, not the council officials, which has been pointed out to them. In the Q&R zone area, there are over 100 dedicated spaces made available for Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council employees to use. So it's very confusing why the residents are unable to use any of these spaces. The councillors surely have some form of duty to respond to the residents. Otherwise, what is the point of them if it's left to the council officials who manage policy, not make policy? I write this of my own volition and not on behalf of the residents. And that's from LF White, Sussex Street in Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. And the last letter from me is another one about the army barracks. It says, it's written by Margaret Grant. It says, thank you, Mr. Peter Lamb, for raising the most important facts regarding Sir John Moore Barracks. Chronicle Letters, September the 26th. I hope social media has also taken notice. Here is a great opportunity for Winchester to lead the way and show the government, via our new MP, planners and councils, what could be done without wastage to protect the local public purse. use all these ready-made amenities and services that are in place on the site. It would be better used for NHS needs, or even a new council village, maybe for a mixture of army veterans and local people of all ages living or working in the area. Come on, Winchester, where's your get up and go? Have your say and vote to protect our city from losing its individuality and green spaces. Make sure the three maids would be pleased to cast their spell to help the authorities see sense over this area and road. Just an extra soapbox thought. If the charging facilities at Three Maids Hill can have facilities, why not also our bus station? A coffee cart, perhaps. Maybe even the toilets could be reopened for waiting passengers. That letter is written by Margaret Grant of Berriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester. Well, that's all of our letters for this week. If you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, editorial comment this week is being read by Richard, please.
And it's headed Phones, Children, Parents and Schools. Good luck to Claire Ferniehoff and her friend Daisy Greenwell in their campaign to protect children from premature exposure to smartphones. We report on the initiative that they launched early this year to encourage schools to deter the use of smartphones by children in the schools. Such use is clearly harmful. Children aged 9, 10 or 11 should not be looking at hardcore pornography or scenes of strong violence from around the world. There is an argument that children have always been looking at things they shouldn't, which is true, but not anywhere near the same level as today, courtesy of social media and the internet. Claire and Daisy launched the Parents Pact last week, where parents will agree to delay giving their children smartphones until the end of year 9, around 14 years. This pact saw 20,000 signatures on the first day and is currently at 53,000, with support from parents at 296 schools in Hampshire. It throws up a real conundrum. As Claire told us, we either give our children access to an adult product that opens the door to harmful context, addictive algorithms and the anxiety machine that is social media, or we risk alienating them from their peers at a crucial stage of their development. So the sense that parents are not alone is important, as is the support of schools. In the past, schools have very much seemed to be on their own in tackling the issue. Local newspapers have highlighted that a head teacher's action may invariably have appeared to be on their own. There needs to be a coordinated approach, not just practically, but also psychologically.
Thank you, Richard. The opinion piece this week is written by Joanna Lewis, and it's headed Dream Trip, or was it? One intriguing debate in the Lively Chronicle Letters page recently caught my eye. Cruisezillas, the rise of mega cruise ships. The behemoths, how do you pronounce it?
Behemoth.
Yes. Of the deep, wrote one reader, gorging on filthy, untaxed fossil fuels, belching CO2 and methane into the air and soiling the seas. The call for their banning received a swift response a week later. Another contributor insisted that new ships use green energy, recycle water, and at ports plug in and unload their waste. Over the last 30 years, cruise ships have grown longer and wider. The largest, the Icon of the Seas, weighs 248,336 tons and is 1,198 feet long. This mega floating hotel feeds and entertains 7,600 passengers at a time. Demand is increasing too, with 2.3 million luxury cruise holidays in the UK and Ireland taken last year alone. A few weeks ago, I found myself looking up at a megaship on the quayside at Southampton. It was about to welcome 5,200 passengers, and its 1,800 staff were bracing themselves. Obscene and terrifyingly large, with 19 decks, or an engineering triumph that offers luxury for all? Well, not being great with heights or the sea, my legs turned to jelly. Now, this was quite awkward, as we were boarding at the time. Yes, dear reader, I was embarking on the bucket list visit of the Norwegian fjords, a dream of a lifetime and an affordable holiday. The plan was to get closer to the ancestors and visit some of the most beautiful and UNESCO-protected landscapes on the planet. But would we be able to enjoy the experience, with so many issues and contradictions floating around in our inner flotsam and jetsam? Hell yes. And we weren't even on the inclusive drinks package. I will be in deep water, I know, but it was one of the best holidays I've had. I had intended to go in search of the captain and ask some difficult questions, but a lot of time kept getting taken up searching for our cabin. We kept getting lost. I had planned to ask staff for their views and experiences, but they were working so hard and being so professional, I thought they should be spared. I intended to interrogate Norwegians as to their views, but they were always smiling and waving at us, and perhaps the tourist season there is quite short. There's a long way to go for cruising to be seriously environmentally friendly. Although improvements have been made, plastic has been reduced, fuel is much cleaner, passengers are asked to be mindful of their use of scarce resources, food portions are smaller. But basically, the landscape and the experience took over. The scenery was stunning and amongst the most spectacular I have ever seen. We went on local boat excursions at every port. I learnt so much about the Vikings, that they were not called that at the time, and why they left. Beer is £15 a pint, and Christmas jumpers start at £150. We saw whale pods and basking seals, and not just at the eat-as-much-as-you-like-on-board buffet. I faced my fears and went on the world's steepest cable car, the Leon Skylift. Oh, it was hideous. I cried all the way up and all the way down. I could not go anywhere near the viewing platform. But the fact that I did not urinate into my walking boots at any point makes me feel victorious. I also learnt the value and beauty in minimalism in our perfectly designed, cute cabin, which made the efficient use of space as an art form. Now I think I could happily live in a caravan. Ultimately, you return with the Earth's natural beauty firmly imprinted in your mind, but also its growing fragility. One of our treks was to the famous Briksdal Glacier. Since the 1860s, it has receded by over a mile. Right, we now have Belgarum, which is, you probably recall, is an alternative look at the news. Two items this week. Jackie, to start, please.
Spades and dishcloths at Unit 12. Reporters swapped their notebooks and pens for spades and dishcloths to help out at Winchester Charity. Reporter Chris Atkinson and head of news Andrew Napier spent a Friday at Unit 12, the arts and community hub in Winnell Valley Road. They worked in the garden with its designer, Esther Hack, cutting the grass and weeding. Unit 12 manager, Lara Tarrant, said, "Maintaining the garden has proved difficult this year with the rain and the sun. It's grown very fast, and we are reliant on volunteers to help us. Volunteering is key to our success, and we welcome all volunteers, whatever their skill set." Then Chris and Andrew washed up more than 200 glasses and mugs.
Thank you. Deborah, please.
And the second piece is headed 30 Years on the Road. Britain's longest-lasting female duo, Chris Weil and Julie Matthews, are performing near Winchester as they celebrate 30 years. They've played more than 2,500 gigs, appeared on over 100 albums, written hundreds of songs, and reached millions of people around the world. This year, they celebrate 30 years as a duo and are performing around the country to commemorate the achievement. Chris and Julie are generally regarded as folk singer-songwriters and have been nominated 10 times in the BBC Radio 2 Folk Music Awards in the Best Song, Best Duo and Best Live Act categories. They won the Best Duo Award in 2009. Chris performs vocals, guitar, banjo, dulcimer and percussion, and Julie performs vocals, piano, guitar, mandolin and bouzouki. The pair are one of the most respected duos on the world folk roots scene. Their outlook, however, is actually more akin to the DIY philosophy of punk. They oversee their own careers completely and are two empowered women doing it their way, without compromise. They're embarking on their biggest tour to date, celebrating 30 years at the top of their game, with special guests joining them at a number of venues, including King's Somborne Village Hall on October the 18th.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, Richard has an item of historical interest.
Yes, well, historical has a rather broad interpretation. <Okay. laughs> Friends memorabilia proves a hit. Memorabilia from the set of Friends, including a jumper worn by the late star Matthew Perry, have been sold in an auction marking three decades since the US sitcom first aired. Friends, the one with the 30th anniversary auction, featured costumes worn by the main cast and notable guest stars, furniture and props from Central Perk, where the group often gathered on screen. The top-selling item of the auction was a studio-made reproduction of the Central Perk orange sofa where the gang spent many famous scenes, Julian's auction said. The prop sold for £22,000, also 15 times its original estimate. Among the items exceeding its estimate was a teal polo-style jumper worn by the character Chandler Bing, Perry, in an episode titled The One with the Holiday Armadillo. It was worn during a scene in Central Perk where his fiancée Monica Geller, Courtney Cox, confirms she won't be changing her last name to Bing. And again when Phoebe Buffay, Lisa Kudrow, brings her late mother's Christmas candy dish to their holiday party. The jumper sold for $6,500, more than six times its estimate. Other clothing items from the show's guest stars, including the pink ensemble worn by Winona Ryder, who played an old sorority sister in The One with Rachel's Big Kiss, which sold for $2,600. The white dress shirt worn by Bruce Willis in The One with the Ring, where his new girlfriend Rachel tries to get him to open up, sold for over $3,000. A studio-made reproduction of the Geller Cup trophy from an episode titled The One with the Football sold for over $9,000, marking 30 times its original estimate. The sitcom originally aired on September 22, 1994, until May 6, 2004, spanning 10 seasons. The show starred Jennifer Aniston as Rachel Green, Matt LeBlanc as Joey Tribbiani, David Schwimmer as Ross Geller, Kudrow as Phoebe Buffay, Cox as Monica Geller, and Perry as Chandler Bing. 30 years since its debut, people from all over the world are still falling in love with Friends, as evidenced by the success of today's auction, said David Goodman from Julian's Auction.
All right, thank you for that, Richard. Now, we come to the what's on. So there's a lot to tell you about events in our area, which we hope you might find of interest. So could you start off, please, Jackie?
Yes, Julian back to star as Pantomime Dame. A performer is returning to Winchester to star in this year's family pantomime, Mother Goose. Julian Eardley, well known for his role as the theatre's Pantomime Dame, will play the title role of Mother Goose this winter. It will be Julian's 15th pantomime at Theatre Royal Winchester and his 12th time playing a dame. Julian first appeared at the theatre in 2008 as Belle's sister, Smeller Bottom, in Beauty and the Beast. He has since played various roles, including Widow Twanky in Four Dames in Search of a Panto in 2020 and Fairy Kindheart in last year's Cinderella. Julian's love for pantomime dames began in 1972 when he saw Danny LaRue in The Queen of Hearts at the Palace Theatre, Manchester. He performed in pantomimes during university but only landed his first dame role in a touring production over Christmas 2000. Since making his Theatre Royal Winchester debut in 2007, Julian has shared his pantomime experiences through interviews, online platforms and radio. In 2022, he gave a lecture about life as a pantomime dame to the Art Workers Guild in London. Before the pantomime season begins, Julian will share more insights in an audience with Dame Lily Trot Twanky at the theatre on Sunday, November the 10th. The evening will include a post-show Q&A. This production marks the first time Mother Goose will be performed at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Tickets are on sale now, with a number of accessible performances available. It will run from Saturday, November the 30th to Sunday, January 5th. For more information or tickets, visit theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or call 01962 840 440.
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is headed Wizard Week is Back. Little wizards and witches will be brewing up plenty of eerie excitement at the Watercress Line this Halloween. The spine-tingling Wizard Week will return from Saturday, October the 26th to Sunday, November the 3rd. Fearless families will enjoy magical steam train rides, spooky activities and enchanting adventures. From getting spellbound with magic wands to exploring Harry Potter-style coaches, there's a host of Halloween fun to sink your teeth into. Excuse me. During the week, people are invited to hop on the Wizard Express and travel through the Watercress Line's four heritage stations, including a stop at the famous footbridge where scenes from the Harry Potter films were shot. With unlimited train travel, you can explore the heritage stations at your own pace, making it a hair-raising day to remember. Creepy highlights include a slime laboratory, where you can create your own slime to take home. In this new activity, guided by Professors Slugwind and Apricus. There'll also be a circus skills workshop, where you can try juggling and other tricks, and magic shows with daily magical performances at 12:30 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. There will be a frightening fancy dress competition where you can come dressed as your favourite spooky character and take part in the daily fancy dress competition held at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. There's a chance to win a prize in one of the three categories: brand new wizards for the under fours, emerging wand talent ages 4 to 8, and potion masters for the over eights. Find out more at watercressline.co.uk/wizardweek. Deborah, please.
Who done it? Excuse me. Who done it to be staged in the cathedral? The University of Winchester will host another of its popular whodunits, this time in the city's cathedral. The Departments of Policing, Criminology, Forensics and Law have teamed up to create a murder mystery for the cathedral's annual Law Week, which runs from Saturdays, October the 5th, to Sunday, October the 13th. Natasha Harding, head of the Department of Policing, Criminology and Forensics, has penned the scenario titled Death in the Cathedral. Participants will be transported back to 1560, where a death has occurred and foul play is suspected. They will examine the crime scene and return to the on-site laboratory to consider the evidence and solve the case. Natasha said, the cathedral makes an extremely dramatic backdrop to our latest whodunit. This whodunit allows those taking part to become time travellers for a day, solving a Tudor crime with some of the latest 21st century techniques. 3 90-minute sleuthing sessions will explore the criminal investigation methods of Tudor times on October the 5th. The university's Faculty of Law, Crime and Justice is behind another Law Week event, a panel discussion entitled Behind Closed Doors: The Journey from Arrest to Sentence. The event will take place at the Stripe Auditorium on Wednesday, October the 9th from 7:30 p.m. It will be hosted by Amelia Riviere, Magistrate and former High Sheriff of Hampshire, and Bill Davis, Dean of University's Faculty of Law, Crime and Justice, who will be joined by experts from the police and the judiciary. Law Week 2024, which has the theme Open Minds, is the second outing for this law, crime and criminal justice focused festival, which aims to bring law to life in ways that challenge, inform and inspire. Other events include Making Choices, an interactive performance exploring youth criminal justice, on Thursday, October the 10th at 7:30 at Winchester Cathedral. There will also be an author talk on Friday, October the 11th at 7:30 p.m. in the Cathedral, where Andy West, author of A Life Inside, and Lucia Osborne Crowley, author of The Lasting Harm, will discuss how well our criminal justice system is working for both perpetrators and victims.
Deborah Richard, please.
All-male cast for Pirates of Penzance. The all-male cast of the award-winning Pirates of Penzance has been announced ahead of its performances at the Theatre Royal Winchester. The production, a classic Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, features Cameron McAllister as Frederick, Robert Wilkes as Ruth, David McKechnie as Major General, and Lewis Kennedy as the Sergeant of Police. Directed by Sasha Regan, the production company Regan de Winter Williams Productions is known for its unique all-male adaptations. Regan's approach to transforming classics into all-male productions stems from her own experience performing Gilbert and Sullivan at a single-sex school. The Pirates of Penzance was initially staged in Southwark, London, where it won Best Off-West End Production before touring London and Australia. The production will visit the Winchester stage after Regan's all-male versions of The Mikado and HMS Pinafore were performed at the theatre. The Pirates of Penzance will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester from Tuesday, October the 8th to Saturday, October the 12th at various times.
Richard Jackie?
Yeah, Fringe Hit at Theatre. An Edinburgh Fringe Hit is coming to Theatre Royal Winchester. Pleading Stupidity, a comedy based on the true story of two Australians, Chad and Brad, who robbed a bank during their gap year, is on Tuesday, October the 15th. The play follows the pair's hapless criminal activities, which include wearing work name tags during the robbery, taking selfies with the stolen cash, and having a flawed getaway plan. Their defence in court was pleading stupidity, and now, out of prison, the pair and the bank tellers they robbed recount their tale of misadventure. The high-energy show, packed with physical comedy, action and verbatim speech, is the brainchild of Maybe You Like It, a theatre company known for creating stage shows, audio shows and podcasts. The company's other popular performances include Sorry I Broke Your Arms and Legs and Redacted Arachnid. Following Pleading Stupidity's successful run at the Pleasance venue during last year's Edinburgh Fringe, Winchester audiences will now get a chance to see the comical adventure. The play will be performed at Theatre Royal Winchester at 7:30 p.m. with a post-show chat to follow, and tickets are available on the website or by calling 01962 840 440. And I'd just like to declare a personal interest, because the writer and director of the play Caleb Barron is my daughter's boyfriend. So I will see you there.
How lovely. I thought you were going to say that you were pleading stupidity. Right, I've got some bits and pieces here from things that are coming up in the near future. At the Badger Farm Community Centre, there is a talk entitled The Isle of Wight Beaver Recovery Project, where Nicola Wheeler, who's the project officer, will talk about her work at the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust's Wilder Wight vision to establish free living beavers on the Isle of Wight. Tuesday the 15th of October, Winchester Film Society are showing Green Border at the Winchester Science Centre. Now, a whole collection of more stuff from the Theatre Royal. Tuesday the 17th of October, Romeo and Juliet. This is a dance production by the Wales Theatre Awards winner. So that is at the Theatre Royal. Wednesday the 23rd of October, the Mugenko Taiko Drummers take the audience on a journey in time, a thrilling ride through their 30 years. The concert is a full theatrical experience with dynamic choreography and heart-pounding rhythms contrasting with atmospheric soundscapes. Thursday the 24th, after a complete sell-out run in 2023, Ruby Wax returns with her rawest, darkest, funniest and most compelling stage show yet. Friday the 25th of October, former Gulf War prisoner of war John Nicol on a poignant journey in The Unknown Warrior. This theatre show delves into the story of the unknown warrior interred in Westminster Abbey, representing the countless British soldiers lost in World War I with no known grave. On Tuesday the 29th of October, R-O-G-E-R, Roger, Radio Attempts Frankenstein. That is, it's spine-tingling classic Frankenstein, it says here. What could possibly go wrong? Yes, quite a lot, obviously. Wednesday the 30th, Do Not Play This Piano. Now, this is sort of a storytelling play by one person at the piano, and it is supposed to be very, very entertaining. Moving on, the last thing I have to talk to you about is on Sunday the 27th of October, the Worthies Makers Market, and that will be at the Worthies Sport and Social Club. So finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at 6:55 a.m. and set again at around 7 p.m. So, it's definitely winter draws on. So now we go on to items of general news with Deborah starting, please.
Developers set to miss road plan date. Developers will miss the trigger date for a controversial new through route at a Winchester housing estate. Carla Holmes is supposed to switch a major road from Andover Road to Winchester Avenue through the King's Barton estate, once 650 homes have been occupied. But Carla says the switch will not be made until early 2026, even though 618 units are now occupied, and the 650 target is likely to be hit in 2025. Ian Curry, technical director of Carla, told the King's Barton Forum that there were legal issues to be resolved with Hampshire County Council, the Highways Authority. We're aware it is a frustration for people wanting to get it done as quickly as possible. It has been priced, it's ready to go as soon as we can get the technical approval. Forum chairman Steve Cramoyan said the public are concerned that this spine road through King's Barton isn't coming through at the trigger point that was expected. What assurances can be given that it's going to be next year? when at least we can see how it's starting to shape up? Or could this be delayed again? We get asked this a lot by the public. There's a Section 106 legal agreement, but it's not going to happen by 650 completions. A campaign is still running to stop the diversion of Andover Road. The Residents Association has recently written to the government seeking them to alter the planning permission granted by the Secretary of State about 10 years ago. When 650 homes have been built, the Andover Road is scheduled by a 106 legal agreement to be diverted through the estate. At the current rate of construction, the estate will be finished in around 2035. The Forum heard plans may be hit by the £200 million scheme to alter the M3 junction at Junction 9 at Winnall. Joe Holmes, County Councillor, said the biggest risk is outside of anyone's control, potentially the works on the M3 Junction 9. The development consent order potentially clashes with traffic management diversions. The official diversion will likely be through the northern part of the development at the junction with Harestock Road. Ms. Holmes said, "We're working with the National Highways, liaising with them to understand what the traffic management will look like and whether it will impact and delay Winchester Avenue. Their scheme has priority. It might transpire that there isn't a clash. I'm just highlighting it as a risk."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Assessment waiting list, more than 20,000. More than 20,000 people in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight are waiting for an autism or ADHD assessment, a report has revealed. According to the data revealed at the Children and Young People Select Committee, Hampshire County Council is trying to find ways to tackle the 20,000 on the waiting list for an autism spectrum condition or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder assessment across the county and the island. A report said work is being carried out to analyse demand against current activity and build examples of funding solutions to reduce waiting times. The report indicates that since April 2024, the entire caseload for Hampshire children and young people is 6,257. According to the data, 2,500 have been triaged and accepted onto the waiting list, 306 have been referred, 300 have been engaged in assessment, and 110 have completed assessments. In this regard, Councillor Jackie Porter expressed her disappointment that over 6,000 people are undiagnosed and unmanaged. Councillor Porter said, "I was really disappointed to see that over 6,000 people are undiagnosed. Most of us represent a population of about 13,000 people. So if we thought that half of our division was not receiving the treatment or the understanding or the diagnosis that they deserved, I think we'd all be absolutely appalled." A new organisation, the OWL Centre, has been appointed to provide autism assessment services for children and young people in Hampshire from April 2024 to March 2026. Due to the appointment of the centre, the number of children's autism assessments increased in Hampshire for 24-25. The centre has 10 additional Healthcare Professional Council registered clinicians starting in September 2024 and 4 beginning in November to further increase assessment during the latter half of 2024. To further invest and test and trial more interventions, NHS Hampshire and the Isle of Wight have provided more funding to deliver autism in schools, a national campaign in the county. To support young people with autism and ADHD as they transition into adults, a pilot community hub will be created to provide early intervention on community living, life skills, further education and employment, and financial and housing advice. The service will offer one-to-one peer support in face-to-face and online group settings. It will focus on providing drop-in sessions for advice, support and guidance, and organising activity groups to encourage skill development. The service is due to commence in October 2024.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
I have a public health announcement about the flu and COVID-19 vaccination. You can book in for your flu and COVID-19 vaccination if you are age 65 and over, pregnant, resident in a care home for older adults, or age 6 months to 64 years and in a clinical risk group. Book your appointment via the National Booking Service, the NHS app, or call 119. For questions about COVID-19 eligibility or where to go for your vaccination, call the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight COVID Vaccination Helpline 0300 561 0018.
Jackie, I've also got a medical item here. It's headed, Order What You Need, Please. Pharmacists and GPs across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight are urging people to only order the medication they need from their repeat prescriptions. This plea comes as part of a new campaign launched by NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight on World Pharmacists Day. Around 150,000 people in the region have repeat prescriptions for multiple medications every month. It is estimated that 2.5 million repeat prescription items are wasted unnecessarily each year. Neil Hardy, Chief Pharmacist at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "We are asking you to take simple steps to check your cupboards and see what medications you need before ordering your repeat prescriptions. We want people to have the right medicine and the right care while reducing the amount of medical waste. Unused medicines expire and might not work as intended, meaning your care might be compromised if you don't check what medication you have. We know that ordering unnecessary medications can increase the risk of medication shortages in our pharmacies, and we want to make sure that essential medications are available to everyone who needs them. Your help in reducing the amount of medication that is unnecessarily wasted each year is greatly appreciated." Pharmacies in the region can now treat 7 conditions: shingles, sore throats, infected insect bites, earaches, sinusitis, impetigo, and uncomplicated urinary tract infections. Unused or expired medications can be returned to pharmacies for safe disposal.
Pubs raise a glass to inclusion in guide. Pubs across the Winchester district will be featured in the Campaign for Real Ale, CAMRA, annual Good Beer Guide, as it celebrates its 52nd edition. The Good Beer Guide is published nationally by CAMRA and names great pubs and beers across the country. The Coach and Horses in Sutton Scotney is featured for the first time. Manager David Dobson said, "I'm blown away. I'm also very surprised, as it's unusual for brewery-tied pubs to get this level of recognition. But it's a testament to the effort and energy we're putting into the pub. We seem to be getting busier as other pubs are getting quieter. Being in the guide for the first time will help show that we really are a pub that cares." The Phoenix Arms in Twyford is in the guide for the 4th year in a row. Emma Oakley, landlady for 20 years, said, "That's great. I'm lucky enough to have been featured in the guide for the last 3 years. It's always good for business to be in the guide. Lots of people go by CAMRA, and so we hope this will get more people visiting the pub." Simon Osborne, General Manager of the Flower Pots Inn at Cheriton, was very pleased. "The pub has featured in the guide for 50 years. He said, "It's quite something. We're incredibly grateful and honoured to have received such an accolade. We've been the guardians of this fantastic pub for the last 5 years, but the remaining 45 years were down to Pat, John, Joe and Paul, which mustn't be forgotten. And of course, huge thanks must also go to CAMRA South Hants for their support and our wonderful customers that make this place what it is." The Winchester District pubs named were Cheriton, Flower Pots Inn, Brandy Mount, Four Marks, Off the Rails, Unit 3, Magpie Works, Lower Weald, Yew Tree, Mitchell Dever, Dove Inn, Andover Road, Romsey, Three Tons on Middlebridge Street, Sutton Scotney, Coach and Horses, Oxford Road, Titchbourne, Titchbourne Arms, Twyford, Phoenix Inn, High Street, Upham, Brushmaker's Arms, Shoe Lane, Winchester, Black Boy, Wharf Hill, Full Flood Arms, Cheriton Road, Hyde Tavern, High Street, Queen Inn, Kingsgate Road, Wickham Arms, Kingsgate Street, Wanston, Wanston Arms, Stoke Charity Road. The guide features 4,500 of the best pubs and beers across the United Kingdom and is out now.
Richard, please.
Community shop and post office celebrate anniversary. A village shop and post office run by volunteers has celebrated its sixth anniversary. The Hursley Community Shop and Post Office, which is run almost entirely by volunteers, was bought by the community in September 2018. A total of 119 members of the community bought shares in the Hursley Community Shop Association, which purchased the premises, stock and goodwill. They were supported by grants from Hampshire County Council and the Post Office. The shop, which has been described as a very important hub for Hursley parish life, was particularly valued during the COVID pandemic. Margaret Rose, a long-time Hursley resident, aged 93, said, "The shop has enabled me to continue to live in the village. It would be impossible for me to manage without it." She added, "I really appreciate the helpfulness and kindness of the volunteers who work in the shop." The shop and post office are run by volunteers who take on roles including postmaster, accounting, administration, finance, buying stock, cleaning and serving customers.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Severn received British Empire medals. Hampshire residents have been honoured for their outstanding contributions to society. At a ceremony in Winchester, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, presented British Empire medals on behalf of the King. Julie Duffy from Portsmouth, Valerie Etteridge from Otterbourne, Paul Francis from Southampton, Jeanette McElhaney from Fleet, Colin Oliphant from Sholing, Dane Oliver from Longstock and Robert Pierce from Porchester were all recipients. Mrs. Duffy was recognised for her services to public libraries and the community in Portsmouth. Mrs. Etteridge's award was for her contributions to the community in Otterbourne. Mr. Francis was honoured for his services to public safety. Mrs. McElhaney was commended for her work with young people in the Fleet and Odiham districts. Mr. Oliphant received his medal for his services to the environment and the community in Southampton. Mr. Oliver was recognised for his services to the community in Test Valley. Mr. Pierce was honoured for his voluntary services to young people. The British Empire medals were awarded as part of the Birthday Honours List 2024, acknowledging the dedication and hard work these individuals have shown in their respective fields.
Jackie. My piece is headed Consultation Open for the New Master Plan. Winchester City Council has launched a consultation on the new master plan for station approach. The consultation was launched on Monday, September the 16th and runs until Sunday, October the 27th. As previously reported, the plan for the £150 million regeneration of the land between Gladstone Street and the cattle market in Andover Road, including the station car park and Carfax site, has been drawn up by locally based architecture firm Design Engine. The redevelopment of Station Approach has had a long history. The proposal for its development, put forward by Michael Hopkins Architects, won a competition in 2015. The competition had been marked by several firms withdrawing because of the rules of the competition were said to be too restrictive and fees too low. The surprise veto followed concerns around potential overdevelopment, which required large numbers of parking spaces and the demolition of the former registry office. The scheme was also scuppered by the legal action and political defeat at the City Council. Design Engine was announced as the project lead in 2023 with the aim of getting the development back on track. Initial ideas for the site have included 250 new homes, offices, shops, cafes and restaurants.
Partners that Design Engine will be working with during the redevelopment include New Master Planning, Urban Movement, ARUP, and Stephen B. Urban Council. This new master plan has been created using feedback from various surveys and workshops. During the consultation, Winchester residents will be able to view the proposals and give feedback. Design Engine is also holding several events for residents to find out more. The firm will hold an online information event on Wednesday, October the 9th at 7 p.m, as well as drop-in information at the Design Engine offices in Coker Close, Full Flood, on Saturday, October the 19th between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. The concept master plan is expected to be submitted for endorsement by the Council's Cabinet in early 2025. And more details about the plan can be seen on Winchester Station Approach website. Please.
Innovative carbon calculator launched. The United Kingdom's first carbon calculator for recycled and upcycled second-hand goods has been launched. The calculator, created by Emmaus Hampshire, was launched on Tuesday, September the 24th, by Winchester MP Danny Chambers. It was created by formerly homeless Emmaus companion John Jarrett. The calculator is the first of its kind in the United Kingdom and is designed to measure the amount of CO2s saved by recycling and upcycling second-hand goods. Dr. Chambers said, "This carbon calculator shows just how much talent is locked up in many of our citizens who, for various reasons, have become homeless. Not only is it innovative, but it demonstrates how much value Emmaus Hampshire contributes to our society. If we support charities like this, we can unlock much more of that talent." The launch of the calculator was accompanied by displays around Emmaus Hampshire's three social enterprise stores and information for donors. Emmaus Hampshire Chief Executive Nigel Samuel said, "We give homeless a hand up, not a hand out. Danny understands how our model of providing purpose through work, accommodation and a community sets our companions on the path to independent living. It's great to have his support for our environmental efforts too." Emmaus Hampshire is already a winner in the Winchester Business Excellence Awards. After the launch, Dr. Chambers discussed how issues affecting homelessness and met several of the companions for a coffee and cake and toured the gardens. He said, "Residents can help Emmaus tackle homelessness by donating clothes, furniture and other items for recycling, and they can protect the environment by buying second-hand from the charity rather than buying new."
Richard, please.
Bob, 75, settles into life as a university student. A retired worker from Winchester has found a new passion in life by becoming one of the city's oldest university students. Bob Lakin of Eastgate Street has started studying philosophy, religion and ethics at the University of Winchester at the age of 75. Bob, who had many years during his life, including as a bus driver and a police officer, started the course after he completed an adult education course at Peter Simmons. He told the Chronicle, "I signed up for a course with Peter Simmons in a year studying philosophy with a lecturer called Chris Higginson, who was very good. I got to enjoy it so much that I was looking around and I thought, well, I can hack this." So it was the adult education course that gave me the impetus to do more. Bob has started having his first lessons at the university, calling it a unique experience due to his age. He added, "I think it's a bit of a unique experience for them as well. To be honest, I was quite apprehensive because universities get quite a bit of a stick for what you might call progressive culture, and I thought I might fall foul of that. But in fact, the ideas of diversity, equity and inclusion actually seem to apply within their ethos, and everyone's been fine, and no one seems to think it's that remarkable to see an old guy. I'm beginning to realise that it's tough. There's a lot to do, a lot to read, a lot to learn. But that's why you're there. It's going to be a steep learning curve, I think, because of IT. a lot of stuff you have to access. You have to be pretty good at diving around on different IT systems. And so that definitely isn't a comfort zone, and definitely not a comfort zone for people my age. That's the immediate brick wall I'm looking at. But I'm getting through it. I'm finding the things I need to find. And in the process of finding out what I really don't know, so you feel a little bit, not out of your depth, but you think, oh, I didn't realise I'd have to know that.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Fundraisers go sky high for charity. Cancer patients, their clinicians and family members have raised more than £9,500 by skydiving for charity. Seven brave individuals took part in tandem skydives for Planet's Cancer Charity at Skydive Nether Avon, Wiltshire, jumping from over 14,000 feet. The fundraiser, which took place over the past 3 weeks, has become vital for the Hampshire-based charity that helps patients with pancreatic, liver, colorectal, abdominal and neuroendocrine cancers. One more participant is scheduled to complete their skydive on Friday, September 27th. The charity is hopeful that this final leap will help it reach its £10,000 funding target before the weekend. Among the adventurers was Sophie Hallett, 40, from the Isle of Wight. Her father, Mick, was a long-term patient of Planet's co-founder, Neil Pearce. Sophie had an emotional surprise when she found she was jumping with the same instructor her dad had skydived with in 2014, before his death. Joining Sophie was Mr. Pierce's wife, Nicoletta, who experienced free fall at over 120 miles per hour for about 45 seconds. Oliver Pike, 17, also participated. He is the nephew of Planet's trustee, Tori Kane, who helped organise the skydive fundraiser. Oliver jumped in honour of his grandparents, who both received treatment from the Planet's clinical team in recent years. The final participant, Ali Arshed, a consultant hepatopancreatobiliary surgeon and lead for robotic cancer surgery at University Hospital Southampton, will complete his jump on Friday. Layla Stephen, Director of Strategy and Finance for Planet, said, "We are so grateful to everyone who has participated and supported this wonderful and exhilarating event, which has raised a significant and vital amount of money for our charity. These funds go directly and immediately into providing support groups for our patients, funding innovative treatments and supporting vital research, so we cannot stress enough how important such activities are." Joe Green, Director of Operations and Marketing for Planets, added, "Our fundraisers have done such a fantastic job in getting us so close to our £10,000 target, but we remain just short, so we're calling on people to give us the last push we need to get over the line." Mr. Arshad said, "Planets is doing amazing work supporting patients, funding research and helping introduce innovative treatments for cancer centres across the Central South Coast area. To support the cause, visit justgiving.com/campaign/tandem-skydive to donate."
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now, would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Deborah.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until the next time, goodbye.